What have you tried in the past? This is a really important one that I think not enough people ask. What have you tried in the past that didn't work? And what have you tried in the past that did work? This is huge. Like, I'm in the middle of trying to get a long-term VA situation set up right now. And when people ask me what hasn't worked in the past, I tell them all this stuff, which is like great data for them about what I need from that person.
I'd like to introduce to you Gabby Logan. Gabby and I have known each other for a few years now. We've crossed paths at multiple conferences and seen each other online quite a few times. But why I wanted to bring Gabby on is Gabby's been doing a lot with road mapping, which is the focus of the season of the podcast. And what we want to do is we want to just learn from her about how she went about implementing road mapping or paid discovery in her consulting business. And whatever we can learn from her about any of the hurdles she had to overcome and how what she's learned in implementing or using road mapping as a way of not only getting more clients, but also making more revenue off of her clients. So Gabby, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
So the usual, tell us a bit about who you are, what you do, and what got you to what you're doing now.
Yeah. So it's really nice to talk to business folks because I operate in the travel world. And so I've got kind of a different intro for you guys than I would usually have. So I actually do a variety of different things. I have a business that has not a SaaS, but a kind of recurring revenue knowledge-based database. I also do one-on-one coaching. I have a retreat center where we run our own private events. And I have a weekly webinar that I do every week that we sell in a webinar library. But that's my public-facing stuff. But I also do some things that a lot of writers and people that I coach don't know about, which is that I also do more high-end consulting engagements for destinations, so for tourism boards, for instance, like the island of Kauai. I'm talking to them about doing something. And I'm also a certified executive coach. And so I bring things from there into the engagements that I do, whether with my writing clients who are other freelancers and small business owners like you guys, or with these larger businesses that have larger operational issues.
So you've got your hands in a lot of different pots, a lot of different things you're doing. So you mentioned, kind of that executive coaching, event stuff. You've got this, I guess, product business too, right? That you're selling products over webinars.
Yeah, I have a product. It's like products and service, productized services. Yeah.
Okay. So what,
everything Brennan tells you to do.
Well, what specifically? What would you say in terms of paid discovery, where you're doing some sort of upfront consultative engagement for a fee, what does that typically look like? I assume you have multiple variations on this, but the one that we want to focus on, what does that look like from the perspective of your clients?
Yeah, so there's two buckets there. There's the stuff that I do for other writers and small businesses and the stuff that I do for destinations. So when I do paid discovery for writers, it's tied into some larger ticket items that we have, like our coaching program. Because what I've seen happen is that if somebody wants to do coaching with me and they want to do, say, a one-hour coaching thing, they just want to do one call. There, it's not just that we can't get through a lot in 1 hour. I can answer some questions for them. But what I've always found is that the most important thing, whether it's something that's getting in the way of what they're doing or the problem they really need to solve, it comes up in like the last 2.5 minutes of the call. It's the end of time, we need to go, and they say something that changes everything that I would have told them. And I found this a few years ago, and I really realized that I felt bad because I was doing a disservice to my clients and all the rest of the call when I didn't know about that. And also that it was just a huge opportunity to do more for them later on. So with my small business clients, the writers that I coach, I use the paid discovery as something to qualify them for a bigger coaching program, for a longer commitment, a larger commitment, but also to give them something that they didn't have going into that call, which is the clarity of what they really need to work on, which is actually the most important thing that they need. And it allows me to be doing more discovery with more of those clients than I have space to take on with people for coaching, while also making sense of the people who go into coaching, that they're really a good fit. that they're really people who are going to work on things long term, and that they don't just need that one answer that we could get to in a call, but only if they told me the right things up front. Right. So I use paid discovery with my small business clients that way. Now, the way that it grew with the larger engagements that I do with tours and boards, so the types of things that I do for them are, you could almost think of it as like a branding project or something like that. It's a little more specific to the area of media, but my background is writing for magazines. I run a database of magazines that are looking for stories and what kind of stories they're looking for. And I know people all over the industry. I know editors, I know lots of CVBs, which are tourism boards. I know what's going on in all the trends. So my role in that space is kind of be the person who sees the big picture and to tell each destination what they have right now that's hot, what a visitor would be interested in, what market segments would be interested in that, specific stories about specific attractions in their area. Like maybe there's a hotel with this chef that's doing something really cool. And that is what should be a story, not the new pool that they're building, which is what they want to be sending the press releases right. about. Yeah, they don't have very good ideas about this. This is what I do. So with that, what I found is that similarly to these writing clients that I talked about and the clients that most of you guys would have, the problem when they come to me wanting something is that they don't know what their problem is. That's always the first thing. They come to me asking for something, but they really need something else. So, you know, they might say, oh, you know, we'd love to have you come and like, and see our destination and, you know, tell us what, you know, what we should be promoting or put together some story ideas for us. But then when I look at it, what I realize is that, you know, maybe they have too many cooks in the kitchen. They've got a lot of different PR firms that are working for different properties and they're all competing. Or maybe they've just got really, really great stuff. They've got, for instance, this Kauai project that I mentioned. The island of Kauai, if you haven't been there, it's like the best place in Hawaii to go. It's not over touristed. There's like a one lane road that goes around the whole island and there's never traffic. It's got the volcano. It's got great beaches. It's got great food. But people don't go there. It's not their first stop. So what we would actually need to figure out with Kauai, for instance, is not how to promote this specific hotel or this specific thing, but how to get people in the world on a name brand level to know that Kauai is where they really want to go when they go to Hawaii. So what I found with those clients is that they'll come to me wanting to do some engagement that's like involves me flying out there for a week or two. It's like 10K or 20K or whatever it is. But if I just showed up there to do the engagement that we first talked about, it wouldn't succeed because it's not the right thing that they need. So using paid discovery with those clients, I use it to set up better outcomes for what we can realistically do together that's going to have a big impact on their business.
That makes sense. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I was going to say anecdotally, I've only ever been to Honolulu and that's because that's all I knew about Hawaii and that's where the airport is. So, but so what I'm really curious about is something you said a bit ago, which was, it sounded like you used to have a model of you do like an hour call. And then right at the end, like you said, is where, you know, something would be said, you'd learn something about them that changes the game. Am I correct in thinking, at least, and I think that was for writers, which you were talking about that, that example. Am I correct in thinking that the big shift, the big change is that you have more structure in what that kind of initial consultation is versus just a, I'll get on a call with you for an hour. Are you doing something now where maybe you collect data up front or you get them to, you know, complete some sort of worksheet or, you know, how has that changed from the, like, I guess the onboarding of that new client? Are you like, was the previous way of doing it, were you just really just saying, I'll sell you an hour of time, we can talk whatever, and then there just wasn't a lot of structure and that's what changed, or was it something else?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I would say that this is something that I've made incremental changes over time as well. And so this really applies to any type of service business that you would think of having. I've seen this with a lot of people that I coach in how they work with their clients and other freelancers that I work with, that I find that when you first go into a service offering that has a consulting angle to it, you as the consultant aren't yet super clear on exactly what your clients need. And like I said, they're not super clear on what your clients, on what they need. And so it's really easy to say, okay, well, I have all the experience. Let me get on the phone with you and I'll answer your questions, right? Like that's, we'll call that like basic consulting, like the non-prepped consulting. So when I first started coaching, it was because I was a person who had skill and success in what I did, and other people who were doing similar things saw me doing it and asked me to help them do it. And I have friends who've done this with, you know, like Drupal or marketing automation. There's all sorts of different things. So whatever it is that you did as your own freelance business, well, if you're, you know, if you're seen in the community, eventually people will say, hey, tell me how you did this. Right. So when I started doing the coaching, it came in that vein. And so, like I said, when that starts, you often don't know because you only know your own background. You don't know what other people are struggling with. You don't know the steps to fix those struggles. You don't know all that yet. So the very easy starting point is these phone calls. And what I've seen is that, you know, like I said, there's something that comes up at the end and then I feel bad because I didn't serve them as well as I could during the call. But having these things in place, which I'll go into in terms of how we prep the calls and what we provide afterwards, it's not just something that I have set up because I know what they need. It's something that I started doing because, you know, I heard Brendan talk about it and other people at conferences. And so I set this up, and it's two sides of it. Part of it is what we give them up front to prepare for the call. And part of it is what they get afterwards as the follow-up for the call. And some of the things is that I don't even do like that call anymore. We'll just do it all online because I know that I don't need to do that call with them to give them that thing that they need. And that's really where we've run into now doing the more road mapping session, where if it's a low price thing, it's not actually worth your time to hop on that call with them. And with some clients, they're at such a point of indecision in terms of what they need that it doesn't make sense for them financially to pay you enough to get on that call. But you can still do a road mapping thing with them through surveys and some different forms that you do and then things that you fill out and send them. So it now has two flavors. There's always something that I send them in advance, and we may or may not do that call. And then they'll get a list of recommendations based on their responses, whether that was just in the form or on the call. And so the forms that I use to prepare people, I think I had some of these questions already that I knew about that I would ask people on the call, but I wasn't asking them in advance. And what happens is that by asking those questions in advance now, and they can be simply, you know, like, what are you struggling with most? What is your current, you know, income and what do you want it to be? Or what is the current situation for this product or your work and what do you want it to be? What have you tried in the past? This is a really important one that I think not enough people ask, is what have you tried in the past that didn't work? And what have you tried in the past that did work? This is huge. Like, I'm in the middle of trying to get a long-term VA situation set up right now. And when people ask me what hasn't worked in the past, I tell them all this stuff, which is like great data for them about what I need from that person. But if you don't ask me, I'm not going to sit there and like complain to you about past contractors I've worked with. Nobody wants to do that.
Right.
So for instance, for the writers that I work with, if they are going to their clients, which are companies, you know, like a tour company that has a blog or maybe a tourism board that has a blog or something like this, if my clients that I coach, if those freelance writers go to those companies that they want to blog for and they see that that place has a blog and they say, okay, I'm going to put together a proposal for you based on what's already on your blog and some changes that I think you can make without asking, what have you done that didn't work before? They might miss the fact that the company owner actually hates everything that's on their website because they had a really bad experience with the person who did it before, and they don't want anything that looks remotely like that. So it's really important, I found, in the pre-form to ask these questions so that they can have like a safe space to bitch about things that have happened in the past, because they're important to that person's experience. You know, they're really important to what they want in the future. So that's one question that I always ask. And the other thing that is a journalism tip that I include on all of our forms is that we ask everything that we're going to ask. And then at the end we say, is there anything else that you'd like to tell me? And this is like a big journalism interview tip, which is that that's the moment where that other thing comes out of left field that's really important to them that they wouldn't have told you otherwise, because it didn't seem to quite fit into any of your questions, but it's on their mind.
Right, right. Yeah, you know, what's interesting about what you're saying is specifically in regards to the what didn't work aspect is you're basically asking them to say, you know, what have you done that's been a mistake? Where, like you mm-hmm. were saying, people don't typically want to say, oh, I got, you know, on the surface, they might say, you know, I got screwed over by so-and-so freelancer before coming to you, which is oftentimes a proxy for saying, I didn't really know what I wanted. I didn't really know what I was doing. I didn't know how to manage this project and so on. And then, you know, it ends up being so-and-so's fault. But what I think is interesting that you're saying is you shifted away from selling an hour of Gabby's time to selling really a packaged thing, right? Like you had the pre thing, you had the post thing. The call was kind of it was like a component of the product, if you think about it. And I mean, what it mm-hmm. sounds like happened was, well, a few things. And I know this because that's something I think we all end up doing at some point. But, you know, when you're just saying, I'll give you an hour of my time and, you know, you might have some context, you might have some knowledge about who they are and some other stuff. You don't always have a well thought out brain dump that gets you and them on the same wavelength, which means the call is kind of a waste of time for the most part until the end, which is something you experienced, right? And it just ends up being more productized, but it's a better thing. It's a better product that you're offering than just, we'll jump on a call.
Yeah. And I'd love to just expand on something that you said about the brain dump, which is something that I've learned through coaching, which is super important for everybody who runs a business. And I'm like telling everybody I know about this, which is that what Brennan was just saying about, you know, when you ask them what didn't work, you're really asking them what's been a mistake. Is anybody who offers something that's a consultant type thing where you have some expertise and you are somehow choosing from among the things that you know, what is the solution for this client? It's really important to know what was a mistake in the past so that you don't propose that exact same thing. This is one of the biggest hurdles that I've seen people that I coach run into with their clients, or that I've seen when talking to people who are watching other people have consulting conversations, is that there is this moment where people say, oh, okay, great. You answered this question. I know now what you need to do. You need to do this. And then they start going all on and on and on about how this works, but the client's already tried that and they hated it, or they've already thought about it and there's a reason that they didn't do it. And now the consultant's gone on for like 10 or 15 minutes babbling about something that the client has zero interest in, and they're getting increasingly not just annoyed with the consultant, but they feel like the consultant doesn't listen to them, isn't on the same wavelength with them, and all of these things. And so having more information before you do spend that quality time on the phone with the client helps you to not look like an idiot, which is like really huge and people don't think about it. And so what I have even found now is that when I'm on the phone with people who are doing consulting things for me, I notice this now. That like, I'll say something and they say, oh, great, here's the thing. And I notice when I'm not interested because I'm listening, you know, patiently and politely to let them finish their sentence, but I'm just really waiting to tell them why we can't do that. And that's something that you as the provider want to avoid at all costs. And a really good way that I've seen to do that, this is another coaching trick that's really awesome, is that if you do have a call as part of whatever it is that you're creating this road mapping for, is to use that call as more of an interview where they're giving you more information than for you talking. Your talking or your recommendations should come at the ultimate last moment when you've gotten everything that you can from them. And the coolest trick that I know is at the beginning of the call to say, what's on your mind right now? What could we talk about right now in this moment that would make this the most valuable hour of your week or of your month? And that's when they tell you like the biggest thing that's on their mind that they need the most help with. And it might not be the thing they told you before, but if you can help them with that thing, they will love you forever. And they'll keep coming back to you and spending more money.
Well, if anything, I mean, you'll take what they're telling you in real time, namely, here's what's on my mind right here, right now at this moment, and compound that with the data they already fed you through the intake.
Yeah.
And I mean, I guess what's really interesting is I know the majority of people listening would not consider themselves to be coaches, which is why I like so much that we're talking with you, because you do that. That's one of the things you offer is you know that world, you know how to effectively coach people, which is And in a weird way, I mean, if you're offering road mapping, you're effectively providing a coaching service because that's
exactly
you're providing a consultation. You're saying, I'm not going to just be an order taker. I'm going to work with you to help you figure out, given the data, given the inputs, help you figure out what should we be doing to get you to where you need to get to, which is exactly what a coach does, right? So I think there's a lot that can be learned from coaches if you plan on offering some upfront paid discovery.
But you know what? I think it's even more than that. Even if you don't plan on offering upfront paid discovery and you're just listening and you're thinking like, oh, this road mapping thing is new and interesting. I'll think about it in like 2 years once my business is up and running. I can tell you because the people that I coach one-on-one are by and large new. They're new to working closely with clients, setting up their own contracts, all these things. And if you are not coaching your clients, if you are not managing them through the process of working with you, the engagement will not end well. Like I've seen this time and time and time again, is that if you don't take like a guiding force and a strong hand and the responsibility for the success of the understanding and communication of that relationship, it won't happen because your client has their own business that they're running. To them, you're like a cog in this large system. But for you, the efficacy of that engagement is the system. And so you have to be the one that curates its effectiveness. So even if you don't think of yourself as a coach, or coaching sounds like a woo-woo thing, like the place where I got my certification is the least woo-woo place ever.
Right.
This guy is serious. They do like million-dollar engagements for healthcare and huge companies and stuff like that. Like coaching is not something woo-woo. Coaching is making sure that everybody gets the best thing out of the situation. And so something actually like that Brennan had said that made me think of this was that a lot of times, you know, whether you're offering road mapping or not, but especially if you're offering road mapping, if you're coming in as a provider, whether that's as a graphic designer or a temporary CTO or whatever, I've seen a lot of my friends say that when they become the order taker, when they are just doing the tasks that's handed to them by the person, their strategic input gets less valued and their rates go down with that same client.
Yep.
It's much harder for them to price highly for big engagements and for strategy and that intangible high price that you have the clients pay just because you know the answer. So this aspect of, you know, the road mapping and, you know, the coaching that goes with it, but helping them see what's the most important thing for them and that you're going to take them there, that is what commands a higher price. And without that, if you're just the order taker, in the client's mind, you get put in a different payment bucket.
Well, you're basically a glorified machine at that point, right? Like if you're just order taking, that's what you are. And
what do they think about that or not? Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're basically setting yourself up as a reactive, meaning tell me what to do and I'll do it commodity. Whereas what people really want is I'm stuck in the mud here. I want to get over there. I kind of think I know how to get there, but I'm not sure. And if you come in as that expert who says, look, I've helped other people get over there, let's talk about your situational uniqueness, right? Where you are right now and work with them. And I mean, that's all we're talking about. It's just basically, it does affect, like you're hinting at, it affects the ultimate engagement. If you're using this as a way to kind of qualify and get people in the door, it does ultimately affect how the implementation work actually gets done. And how you're treated and
totally.
And how much authority, I guess, you have in the direction of the overall project.
Yeah. And like I used to be a graphic designer and I used to work also at a university doing big design and printing projects where we had a lot of people who were consulting on design or copy and stuff like this. And I've just seen so many of these engagements go sideways where like no one is happy with the final result because everybody was just too about their own objective, you know, like the designer wants the design to be the best looking thing it can be, or, you know, they have this concept of it. And what makes you become the contractor, the freelancer, the small business that they turn to for everything is being that person who seems to psychically understand what they want. But you're not doing it psychically. They told you everything and you're just repeating it back to them. And that's really the beauty of the whole concept of road mapping is that you get the client to do the work. I had this copywriter that I'm working with for something right now. It took me like 6 hours and 3,500 words to fill out this pre-engagement form that she had given me. It was huge. It had so many questions. It made us do so much soul searching about our company. And because of that, she's got the best information to do that.
She knows how to write the right copy.
Has read my mind.
Yeah,
but she's read my mind because she asked me these questions and made me have to really think about things. Like, what celebrity do I think of myself as? What's the theme song for a company? Like, things that I wouldn't think about to tell her. Like, give her this flavor. Brennan, you would love this form.
I would bomb on that.
It took me a really long time. This form was amazing. It was like the most beautiful piece of like setup that I've ever seen. But if you're doing a road mapping thing, what was happening is that you're getting the client to pay you to do that mind reading. And what I see happen a lot, and Brennan, I'm sure you hear this happen all the time, is that people have pitched a client, they talk to the client, they're so excited, they put together this proposal for the client, they've spent hours or days or whatever putting together that proposal, and then they send the proposal and it's crickets.
Yeah.
And road mapping is the answer to that.
Yeah.
And it seems so counterintuitive to get the client to pay you for that. I know so many people, whether you know you're doing design or development, whatever, it seems like that's a part of the process, that you put together the proposal. But the reality of the situation is what we just talked about valuing your strategic input, that proposal is a plan for the client. It's a plan of how they should approach this project. It's a plan of the timeline for that. It's a plan of the stakeholders for that. And it's something that you are generating a strategy for. And if you don't charge them for that, they're going to undervalue your strategic input throughout the rest of the engagement. So the thing with road mapping is like it takes a little mindset shift for you as the provider to get into doing it, but there's no downside. Like if you say like, yeah, like this sounds great. Like I'd love to talk to you about this project. What I typically do is that I have this process where I work with clients and I do this, this, and this, and you get this deliverable where you see what the project would look like for you. And then it's up to you to decide if you want to move forward with me or with a different provider. And the cost for that is this. They'll just say no. But you know what? Now they've said no before you put that proposal together, rather than no after you've sunk dozens of hours into prepping for that phone call and putting that proposal together.
Right. And I think the way a lot of us justify it is this is a loss leader. Yes. I need time in order to make money, which, you know, there's still prospecting and all the other stuff that prefaces a road mapping engagement, but ultimately, I think what you're saying, which I am completely in lockstep with, is that you, by doing this, a few things happen. First off, you're giving the client a taste of what it will be like to work with you. You're giving yourself a taste of what it will be like to work with them on a very fixed priced, fixed scope engagement. So the issue that I always say is, you know, when you're throwing over the wall the big proposal that took you a week to put together, let's say that you're asking for $50,000 and a 4 month long engagement. I mean, it's more than money. You're basically saying you need a risk on me, who you've never worked with before, the next 4 months of both time and potential opportunity and $50,000. And that's the resistance. And by doing this, you can say, look, let's start small. I mean, it's the same, like, why do internet marketers sell tripwire products before they try to sell you on the $5,000 course? It's the same thing. It allows for that kind of value exchange to happen on a limited and controlled way, which is just better for everyone.
Yeah. And to extend what you said about giving a client a taste and giving you a taste and that tripwire thing, I talk about this a lot with in my industry, but it happens in all industries, which is right now in terms of providers that you can hire remotely to do project or hourly based work. The market is flooded. People don't know who to use. I have a friend that has a large real estate startup. Well, it's not a startup anymore. It's mature, that he sold and he's cashed out now and he's figuring out what his next startup is going to be. And we spent a few hours talking about this the other day. For him, he said for his next company, the biggest thing he's going to invest in and focus on the beginning is human capital. Because right now, people who own companies don't know who to hire because there's so many people who flake. There's so many people who completely blow their estimates and then tell the client that they need to pay for it later, even though that it wasn't clear in the scope. There's people who are just not as skilled as they present themselves to be and create code that creates all sorts of problems when it's integrated. There's just people doing all sorts of crap work out there. And people who are hiring, who have gotten burned before, are very reticent right now. And so what's happening is that everything you can do to build not just trust, but authority with the client early on is gold, because most people are not prioritizing that. Most people are not prioritizing that level of curating the relationship. And so the nice thing about roadmapping is that it sets up your engagement with that client, that you are looking out for them in a business setting as a professional from the get-go. You show that you have a process. And I think I've heard Brennan talk about this quite a bit, but like, by having a process, the advantage for us as the, you know, as the small business or the contractor, the freelancer, is that less stuff falls through the cracks, things go well every time, that you use the best procedure every time. But for the client to see that you have a process means that you are closer in their minds to a brick and mortar business. You are closer to a serious, quote unquote, business.
You're not just
that
some random
way of doing things.
Coffee shop dwelling person who's going to flake out.
Exactly. And that's huge right now to show clients.
Yeah. And I think that's the big thing that I think, you know, I think a lot of us want to have that flexibility. But at the end of the day, if a client could buy off the shelf what we're giving them through a consulting engagement, they would. If they could say, mm-hmm. I pay X and I get Y right now, they would do that every day. But there's just not, I mean, that's not realistic. So they want to still be sold that way. They still want to get the confidence and the guarantee. By guarantee, I don't mean that the work you do is going to make them $1 billion or their money back or whatever. The guarantee that you know what you're doing. The guarantee that you've done this before, that you have, that you're bringing them down a path that is well-trodden. Even if it's the first time you've been down that path, at least you have a plan. That's like you're saying, that's what people want. I know when I hire consultants, I mean, if somebody comes to me and they are like, yeah, let's talk, and they don't really have a system, I'm very skeptical that this is going to turn out well. But when somebody comes to me and says, here's exactly what we're going to be doing, here's what you can expect, here's what the flow is going to be like and so on, I'm like, okay, this is less risky for me. And again, it goes back to that. It's not just money. It's my time. It's the opportunity that I'd miss out on if I screw up with you and then need to go elsewhere. So there's a lot to consider there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think something that you said, Brennan, that's so key for people who haven't started doing road mapping yet, but that are looking at doing it, is that not that it doesn't matter if you've done this before, but having the plan and telling the client, this is my plan. This is how I work with people. Even if it's not something that you have done before, this client you're having a conversation with, it still matters. It still counts. It still works. You don't need to have imposter syndrome that you didn't do it before this engagement that you're starting it with. Because I see this happen with some of my clients. And what happens is that those engagements where they start like this and they just say in a very present tense way, this is how I work. This is what I do. This is when you can communicate with me. You know, this is when I need this from you. This is when you'll get this from me. They go so much better even the first time. So don't feel like you need to pussyfoot and like do a lower price engagement or something like that to test this. It's something you can just implement right away and say, this is what I do.
Right, right. Well, Gabby, this has been an excellent brain dump of awesome information. Especially, I love the fact that you have this coaching angle that can help people who are not self-described coaches think about this kind of stuff in the right way. If people want to either say hi or learn more about you, what's the best way for them to do that?
So my company is all about travel writing, but we do on our blog have all sorts of information about freelancing and mindset and business and stuff like that. So the best place to find me is through that site. It's called dreamoftravelwriting.com.
Perfect. Well, Gabby, thanks for coming on.
Thanks. It was great to be here.